It's baffled scholars for two millennia. It is a puzzle made of multidimensional elements. An enigma with roots that reach back to the dawning of time, perhaps before. Daniel explained part of it. Ezekiel and Isaiah had glimpses into it. John saw it all for the time of the end. That time is now. Join Derek and Sharon Gilbert on a journey that spans the course of history. From Eden to Mount Hermon. From Hermon to Babel. From Babel to Rome. From Rome to the cross. And from there to us. Biblical prophecy is coming true before your eyes. And to understand it, you must discern the times both then and now. It's time to unravel the threads of this all-encompassing prophetic paradox. It's time to unravel Revelation.
Welcome to Unraveling Revelation from Skywatch TV. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I am Sharon Gilbert, and we are back in studio. We've been, actually, you don't know this, but we've been gone for a couple of weeks, and we're going to tell you all about it.
Oh, yes. We saw some interesting things, some of which we cannot yet reveal because it's information that has not yet been made public.
We've been warned, don't reveal these things.
But some of it has recently been published, and we're very excited to share some of that with you today, and also to tell you about our new program, which is, by the time you're watching this, may already be launched. And we got some information coming on that program related to what we'll be talking about today.
So many things to talk about today, and that's just how we are. Mm-hmm. I mean, isn't it great?
It is.
There is never a dearth. There's never a lack of something to talk about when it comes to prophecy and frankly, uncovering the truth of the Bible.
Absolutely. I thought when we started this program, we might get a year's worth of programs out of it. And here we are. We're only halfway through the book of Revelation. And once again, we are taking another rabbit trail.
We are, but trust me, this rabbit trail is a really good one. And it leads to the, the Old Testament.
It does.
And leads us to Jordan.
Yes, Genesis and the book of Ezekiel.
Because, you know, in the Old Testament, we didn't have the lines on the map the way they're drawn now.
Right.
So Jordan never existed. In fact, Transjordan didn't come around until the late 19th century, early 20th. And then that became Jordan. And the Hashemite kings were brand new. They're not old. They haven't been around for hundreds and hundreds of years.
No, that's
they're
true.
They're new.
That's true.
Just as the house of Sod.
Yeah.
New.
Absolutely. So when we go back to the topic we'll be talking about today, we're going back almost 4,000 years, give or take. There's some dispute about when exactly the event we'll discuss took place, but that's what makes Bible study so exciting. There's never, as you say, there's never a shortage of things to learn.
Well, we have talked on this program about various times when the Lord has come into our space-time continuum, into our material space, and interfered.
Yes.
We'll put it that way. Interfered with the fallen realms agenda. One of those times was the flood.
Mm-hmm.
One of those times was Babel.
Yes.
But another time occurred after that.
Yes. Genesis 18, we read that Abraham appears
you want to read it?
Directly to...
Because this is important, and it actually gets into all of the prophetic events that we discuss on Unraveling Revelation.
Said Abraham appeared. Actually, Abraham was the host, as God himself appeared to Abraham near Hebron, which is southwest of Jerusalem.
Which is a really, really important location.
Yeah. Genesis 18 reads, beginning at verse 1, "And Yahweh appeared to him, Abraham, by the oaks of Mamre, as he sat in the door of his tent in the heat of the day."
Now, I want to stop you there, because when we see oaks of, Mamre is probably the gentleman who ran the place.
Right.
It's not the name of the location, just his name. Very often, gatherings of oak trees were ritual sites.
Exactly. Sometimes called terebinths in the scriptures. And so this was probably a cult site that was important in the ancient world. It was significant enough that when David came into his kingdom, before he ruled at Jerusalem, he ruled 7 years at Hebron. So this was a place that wasn't just important to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, which is where they're buried, the Cave of the Patriarchs. This was apparently a place that had some significance spiritually. And we see hints of this elsewhere in Scripture. We would need to do a deep dive elsewhere in the Bible to point that out. But this was where Abraham was led by God. And there were a number of places that God appeared to or led Abraham that were very, very significant. One of them, of course, was the oak at,
of Moreh.
Thank you. Overlooking Shechem, which is where God first appeared to Abraham to tell him that his descendants would inherit all of the land. So here he's at the oaks of Moreh. And of course, then there was the testing of Abraham on Mount Moriah, which is the Temple Mount in Jerusalem.
Exactly. Well, the site, the Oaks of Mamre, where probably was a ritual site, it doesn't mean that Abraham went there to perform pagan activities. No, no. It's usually a place that has not just the ritual site, temples and things like that, but it also is a place where you can go to trade. It's also a place where you can go to rest, essentially get a hotel room,
right,
that kind of thing, get some water. Trust me, you need water out there. And he stopped here, and I think even today, modern-day Hebron, the fact that it is jointly owned and operated, you might say, by Palestine and Palestinian Authority and Israel.
Mm-hmm. It is still a city that it has some contention or struggle over it. There is a small Jewish community in Hebron. It is surrounded by Arabs. It's considered part of the so-called West Bank.
Mm-hmm. You have both flags flying there.
Right.
And when you go into the Tomb of the Patriarchs, don't be surprised if there's a scuffle outside, because that happened when we were there.
Yeah.
And in fact, there were gunshots not close
elsewhere
to us.
Elsewhere in the city, right.
Far away. But it was enough that our guide sort of gathered all the little chickens together, and he was armed. And, you know, as almost everyone is over there, he's former military. But I think that the spirits are still struggling.
Yeah, and even in even within the Palestinian Authority, there's a story, as we're recording it this week, that one member of the Fatah party has basically banned representatives of the Ramallah government from Hebron.
Yes. So, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So this area has historically, for thousands of years, been a place of spiritual warfare.
Right. And here is why. As we read, he lifted up, Abraham again, lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, three men were standing in front of him. When he saw them, he ran from the tent door to meet them and bowed himself to the earth and said, O Lord, if I have found favor in your sight, do not pass by your servant. Let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree while I bring a morsel of bread that you may refresh yourselves, and after that you may pass on, since you have come to your servant. So they said, do as you have said. And Abraham went quickly.
I want to stop you for a minute, because Abraham is essentially a king. He has a huge, huge numbers of possessions, not only servants, but lots and lots of cattle and sheep. And I mean, you can name it. He's got it.
He's a wealthy man.
Right. And he's sitting in his tent and he sees three men coming far away. What does the wealthy, regal man do? He runs. He knows exactly who these are.
Right. But this also shows the contrast between Abraham and how he treats his guests with how the two angels who continue on to Sodom are treated when they arrive at Sodom.
Yes.
And we'll need to move through this if we're going to get to that aspect of the story.
I know. It's just so much to teach.
Right. So verse 6, and Abraham went quickly into the tent to Sarah and said, quick, three seahs of fine flour, knead it and make cakes. And Abraham ran to the herd and took a calf. And again, he's showing haste here. He doesn't want these guests to feel as though they're being slighted.
Right.
And this was a very important thing. Hospitality was a matter of honor in the ancient
Near East. It is, but I think he also knows who these guests are.
I think you're right. He ran to the herd and took a calf, tender and good, and gave it to a young man who prepared it quickly. Then he took curds and milk and the calf that he had prepared and set it before them. And he stood by them. He stood by them while they ate.
Stood by them under
the tree while they ate. They said to him, where is Sarah, your wife? And he said, she is in the tent. Yahweh said, I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, shall have a son. Mm-hmm. I had forgotten that this event directly precedes the events of Sodom.
This is
huge. Which again signifies the importance of Hebron.
Yes.
Spiritually, as well as historically.
Yes, this is such a pivotal moment.
Mm-hmm. And Sarah was listening at the tent door behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in years. The way of women had ceased to be with Sarah. So Sarah laughed to herself, saying, after I am worn out and my Lord is old, shall I have pleasure? Yahweh said to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh and say, shall I indeed bear a child now that I am old? Is anything too hard for Yahweh? At the appointed time, I will return to you about this time next year, and Sarah shall have a son. But Sarah denied it, saying, I did not laugh, for she was afraid.
Mm-hmm.
He said, no, but you did laugh. Now, interestingly, we've been taught, we remember from the story of Moses and from the story of Elijah, rather, that no man can see God face to face and live. And yet, this is one more appearance of Yahweh in the Old Testament, a Christophany. The angel of Yahweh is Yahweh. It's Jesus Christ.
Exactly, because that's the way he can safely commune with us.
Exactly.
In a personal way.
So here we've got this story of Abraham and Sarah entertaining God himself, the angel of the Lord, and two angels who then travel on to Sodom. Of course, we know that Abraham interceded for Sodom and prayed to God, look, if there are even 10 righteous men in Sodom, will you please spare those that are in the city? And God said, for the sake of 10, I will not destroy it. And Yahweh went his way when he had finished speaking to Abraham, and Abraham returned to his place. Now, this is remarkable in that Abraham had the courage to speak up. But it shows the heart of Abraham, you know, my kin are there. And surely there must be some innocent people who are there.
Surely, surely. Some people have been so affected by being close to Lot that they too have become worth saving.
Mm-hmm.
This is a pivotal moment. We all know what happens after this. Sodom is destroyed, Gomorrah is destroyed, and I think three other cities. I think there were five cities of the plain.
Right.
They were all destroyed. But the Lord came down personally, and the question is why? What is the same between Mount Hermon, Babel, and Sodom?
That's the really interesting question, and I think we're going to tease that and lead to the break here. When we come back, we'll discuss what happened at Sodom. Why did God choose this city specifically for its destruction? It's not because of lifestyle choices. Unraveling Revelation continues after this.
Call now and take advantage of SkyWatch TV's most groundbreaking deal of the year. With the rediscovery of the ancient prophecies from a mysterious group of prophets and scribes hundreds of years before Christ, your understanding of end times prophecy and the final age of man is about to be forever changed. In Josh Peck's new book, The Lost Prophecies of Qumran, the veil is lifted as you discover how much of what you've been taught about Israel in the first century is incomplete. Shockingly, there were Jewish believers who knew exactly what to expect from the coming Messiah, that he would be God in the flesh, would die for our sins, and even the date of his first arrival. In Josh Peck's new book, The Lost Prophecies of Qumran, you will discover lost prophecies only recently discovered in the Dead Sea Scrolls about the time we are now living in, how the enigmatic group known as the Essenes formed and what influence they had on the New Testament, what hidden feasts and festivals the Essenes celebrated, and what messages the group left behind for believers living in the present age, how the prophecies of Daniel and Revelation fit within the Essene timetable, and how an ancient Jewish calendar actually predicts the prophetic significance of the year 2025. But that's not all. For the first time ever, you'll also receive Dr. Ken Johnson's massive three-book collection entitled The Ancient Mysteries of the Essenes, where Dr. Johnson compiles three of his most groundbreaking research studies on the Dead Sea Scrolls into one massive collection. In Book 1, The Ancient Dead Sea Scrolls Calendar and the Prophecies It Reveals, you will discover the secrets of the mysterious 364-day calendar used by the ancients since the time of creation, and how it has been hidden until now for the appointed time. In Book 2, Ancient Testimonies of the Patriarchs, Autobiographies from the Dead Sea Scrolls, you will hear the previously hidden prophetic texts of such patriarchs as Enos, grandson of Adam, Lamech, father of Noah, Amram, father of Moses and Aaron, and even Enoch from the Book of Enoch fame. And in the most shocking revelation yet, Book 3, The Ancient Order of Melchizedek, you will learn astonishing facts about the enigmatic priest Melchizedek, such as why his priesthood was and is different from that of Levi, why the Messiah was ordained after the order of Melchizedek, and how the facts surrounding this mysterious order dramatically affect the theology and practical applications of our Christian walk today. This collection is an absolute necessity for any researcher's library and for those who want to fully step into the minds of the ancients and see the Dead Sea Scrolls like they never have before. Now you can get this incredible collection for your donation of only $35 plus shipping and handling. So don't miss out on SkyWatch TV's most groundbreaking deal of the year, the Lost Prophecies and Ancient Mysteries Collection, available now at SkyWatchTVStore.com. Order now or call 1-844-750-4985.
Welcome back to Unraveling Revelation from SkyWatch TV. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I am Sharon Gilbert, and I really quickly want to thank our good friend Deb Castelli. I love this little outfit, so I had to wear these today. Thank you, Deb. Deb and Charlie Castelli, good friends. We want to have them and many others join us in Israel next year. Pray that the Castellis can go. We're planning on going in March of 2022.
And we'll show you the ancient site of Sodom, because you can see it if you take the three-day extension over to Jordan. Moses climbed Mount Nebo at God's direction, and he was given a vision of the Holy Land. But from Mount Nebo, you can see an archaeological site that now is called Tal el Hamam, about 8 miles northeast of the Dead Sea. It's about 6 miles northwest of Mount Nebo. And we'll explain why we are convinced that that is the location of ancient Sodom here in just a moment. But not only do you see that, you see the plains of Moab, and that will connect to what we're going to discuss here in the next 11 minutes and 55 seconds. And you can find out all about the tour. You'll get a sample itinerary and a breakdown of costs. Reserve your spot at skywatchinisrael.com. SkyWatchInIsrael.com.
And by the way, don't forget to sign up for the Defender Conference. Go to DefenderConference.com. It starts streaming on October 15th. If you sign up by October 10th, you save $10. So by 10-10, save 10.
When we were in Albuquerque just a couple of weeks ago for the International Symposium on Archaeology and the Bible, we were blessed to hear a presentation by Dr. Philip Sylvia.
We were like a couple of little kids.
Oh, man, this was like candy for us, kids in a candy store, hearing about all this biblical archaeology, and some of it, again, still not peer-reviewed and published, but just a couple of weeks ago.
It's very compelling. It just has to go through the official process.
Right.
Because even though these most of these are coming from a Christian worldview, most of these archaeologists, they have to go through the rigor of academia.
Yeah. And there was a report. This was finally peer-reviewed and published by Scientific Reports, which is a peer-reviewed publication of Nature magazine. So
yes.
Nature is a secular magazine. They really don't have a vested interest in proving the truth claims of the Bible. So they had to be, Dr. Sylvia and his colleagues, including Malcolm LeCompte of the Comet Research Group, have been working on this for quite some time. Dr. Sylvia has been working out there at Tal el Hamam with Dr. Stephen Collins of Trinity Southwest University and Veritas International University. They've been leading the excavations there since 2005.
Yes.
And because Christian archaeologists who believe that the Bible is true, or Jewish archaeologists who believe that the Bible is true, are under extra scrutiny because skeptics will say, well, they're just trying to confirm their bias. They think it's true, and so they're trying to prove their bias.
Well, I could say the same thing about evolutionists that go out and try to dig up a bone and say, oh, this is a so-and-so man, and you're trying to prove your bias.
Based on this tooth, we've decided it's a new species, right?
Yeah.
Well, they've had the paper published. They went through some very rigorous testing. The paper is very careful not to identify their findings with ancient Sodom, except to say that the destruction that they found at this site northeast of the Dead Sea appears to fit the description and the timing of the biblical account in Genesis 19. But again, because this is a secular publication, they only went so far as to say this may have inspired the biblical account of the destruction of Sodom.
Yeah, and the thing is, we're not allowed to say everything that we know about it, because not everything we know is in the paper.
That's true. You're right. Thank you for reminding me.
So be very careful.
Yes, there was some information they shared that had not yet made it into the paper. But the title of the paper, and we'll put a link to this if you're finding this online or at skywatchtv.com, we'll put a link to the article here. So if you want to read the scientific article, very detailed, very complicated, but I think very compelling. And they titled it, "A Tunguska-Sized Airburst Destroyed Tal el Hamam, a Middle Bronze Age City in the Jordan Valley near the Dead Sea." Again, not really coming right out to say what we or you and I might conclude. It's like, hey, this seems to fit the destruction mm-hmm. that, because when Abraham and Lot were deciding how they were going to part ways and where they were going to go, the Bible tells us that Lot looked up, which is a euphemism for he looked toward the east. Well, when they did this, they were at Bethel, which is northwest of the Dead Sea. Now, mm-hmm. traditionally, we've been taught that the cities of the plain, Sodom, Gomorrah, the cities of the plain were probably southeast of the Dead Sea. You can't see that area from Bethel. You can, however, see the fertile plains north of the Dead Sea, the Jordan Valley mm-hmm. north of the Dead Sea. So Dr. Collins, back in 2004, 2005, said, I wonder if there are any unexplored Bronze Age cities in that area. And lo and behold, on a large hill that extends out into the plain, visible from Mount Nebo,
sticking up like a sore thumb.
Right, is this ancient site that contains, inside its massive city walls, I mean, the city walls of this site were between 100 and 150 feet wide at the base.
Yes.
The city itself is 75 to 150 feet, the upper level 150 feet above the plain. And I'll just summarize two of what I think were the most astounding findings, which have been public for quite some time, not even, you know, new to this paper. But when they found the destruction layer of the city, which they've dated, we'll talk about the dating in a moment. But anyway, when they found the destruction layer, they found that all the buildings had been blown over in one direction. Now, there's a lot of earthquakes in the Jordan Valley. It's on a fault line. Mm-hmm. But earthquakes cause mud brick to fall in all directions. Mm-hmm. These look like they've been blown over by an explosion, all in one direction. And that in the upper level of the city, it looked like everything above the level of those massive city walls, which were wide enough for patrols to walk back and forth, had been sheared off and blown into the valley on the far side of the tell. So that's one thing. The second thing was, once they got down to the destruction layer, they found that every morning as they came to the site, it was covered by a white crust, which they realized was salt leaching to the surface. So they sent the salt off for testing, and they found that the chemical composition of the salt matches exactly, the salt and the sulfates matches exactly the composition of the Dead Sea 8 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
So how did that salt get, you know, cross 8 miles of valley up 75 feet to
exactly, and there were a number
city.
Of other things that they found
right,
there.
Right.
They had electron microscopy done and many other tests run to see if the material that they found there, which had no business being there, might have come from a bolide.
Yes, a meteorite or a comet, a piece of a comet exploding in the air.
Asteroid,
like
something.
Tunguska.
Huge came down. Yeah.
Back in 1908, the Tunguska explosion leveled tens of thousands of acres of mm-hmm. trees. And they're estimating that
this blast...
Oh, we
saw it again more recently in Russia.
That's right. But they're estimating that this probably exploded with the force of about 1,000 times the Hiroshima bomb that leveled that city in 1945. They estimate the wind speed of the blast, the shockwave that hit the city, at about 740 miles per hour. That is more than double the airspeed of the most powerful tornado ever recorded.
Wow.
Nothing would have survived. The shock, the impact shock, basically was 100% lethal to any living thing in that
area. So, let's go back to Abraham, who's told by Yahweh,
mm-hmm.
the angel of the Lord, that destruction is coming. And Abraham has prayed, please, if there are 10. And, of course, the two angels are sent to Sodom. And you compared Abraham's welcome to the welcome of the angels.
Right. The angels, of course, were pursued by the men of Sodom, who basically chased them into Lot's house. They pressed hard against the man Lot and drew near to break the door down. This is in Genesis 19. But the men, the angels, reached out their hands and brought Lot into the house with them and shut the door. And they struck with blindness the men who were at the entrance of the house, both small and great, so that they wore themselves out groping for the door.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what was all of that about?
What was the whole place about? Why was Sodom... Why did it have such a reputation? It was the major center of that whole area.
Right.
Anyone trading, anyone who wanted to do any business had to come through Sodom.
Exactly. For comparison, by the way, when they excavated, they found 85 acres inside the city walls of Sodom. To compare, Jericho was only 10 acres. Jerusalem is only 12 acres.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives you an
85
idea.
85 acres. That's a huge place.
8,000 people inside the city walls and 40,000 on the plain wiped out
Hint, there's a temple there.
Yes, there's a temple there, and they've excavated that. They've not yet determined who or what was worshipped there. But What Dr. Collins told us, and he's mentioned this in other papers, so I feel comfortable sharing this, was that the architecture of what they found appears to be related to the Minoan culture on the island of Crete.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've learned over the last couple of weeks is that the Minoans had a ritual practice when young boys reached about the age of 12, that they were abducted mm-hmm. by an older man with the help of the boy's friends. This was a rite of passage.
Right.
And he became, I think the archaic English term is a catamite mm-hmm. for the older man, a submissive partner mm-hmm. to the older man. So this apparently, and they found some Minoan-style pottery in and around this site as well. So there's some connection here between that culture and what was going on in Sodom.
Yes, but really quickly, as we're running out of time, this has nothing to do with lifestyle choices.
No. It has to do with the gods who were worshipped. The point is that the Minoans, and apparently the culture around Sodom as well, venerated the dead. There was a death cult on the island of Crete. Apparently,
yes.
There was some evidence that the Minoans practiced even human sacrifice,
mm-hmm.
which there is evidence of that in the eastern, the east side of the Jordan River, the Transjordan. Mm-hmm.
They may have been mimicking something that they heard the gods did in order to identify with the gods.
Right, right.
But I believe they recognized those angels as angels,
right.
And they wanted that angel.
That angelic
experience.
Power. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know,
because
you
that,
do that.
That's what you did. So what if the temple at Sodom was a gateway
mm-hmm.
to the underworld?
That is possible. We even speculated that in the book Veneration before we learned any of this, because that was a center for the cult of Baal Peor. And as we've learned, the word peor is based on a Hebrew word that means, or root that means opening or gap, in this case, opening to the netherworld.
Right.
In other words, Baal Peor was lord of the opening to the underworld, or
right.
lord of the gates of hell.
Yes, the gatekeeper.
Right. So I've even asked that of Dr. Sylvia, and he said, that's an interesting suggestion. Do you mind if I share that with the team? It's like, no, because we'd like to know if we're right. But
well, if that's what was going on, that's the connection.
Right.
That's how we get to Mount Hermon, to Babel, right. to Sodom.
Right. There is a god that was worshipped, we know, in the Transjordan, called by the Canaanites El, but he was also called Milcom by the Ammonites. The Hebrews called him Molech. And in my forthcoming book, The Second Coming of Saturn, I argued that they're all one and the same, as well as Baal Peor. And that old entity, who is now in the netherworld, is to be equated with the leader of the Watchers, the sons of God from Genesis 6, who returns in Revelation 9 as Abaddon,
so
or Apollyon.
Do you think that the activity in Sodom was trying to open that gateway and bring that old god back the way they were trying to Babel?
That would make a lot of sense. Again, if we're talking about the gateway, you know, the Bab El, the gate of gods, or gate of the god, then Baal Peor would be the equivalent of the king of Bab El, the king of the gate of gods.
Oh my goodness. Well, we're going to talk more about that next week on Unraveling Revelation, because frankly, that is where we're headed in this world.
And of course,
the old god is coming back.
It connects to Revelation 9 and the opening of the abyss, and the king over those in the pit, who called Abaddon or Apollyon. That could be who they were worshiping in ancient Sodom.
It
and God
could be.
Saying, like at Babel, we're not doing that.
We're not doing that, and Jesus is coming back to put a stop to all of it.
Amen. Thank you for watching. This is Unraveling Revelation from Skywatch TV.
Unraveling Revelation is part of Skywatch TV, a viewer-supported ministry. To learn more about Skywatch TV and the work of our sister ministry, Whispering Ponies Ranch, please visit our website, skywatchtv.com.